Welcome, viewers and listeners, to another edition of CHP Talks. I'm here today with Jordan Guildford, who represents an organization called Gems for Gems. And I'm going to give her an introduction in a moment. But Jordan, thank you for joining us today from Calgary.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So Jordan calls herself a small town Nova Scotian girl who moved to Calgary in 2014. Once she arrived in Calgary, she saw a desperate need and she initiated a successful jewelry drive to give gifts on Christmas morning to survivors of domestic abuse. And she discovered that the public were very eager to help survivors with their time, energy, and skills. This led to her creating a national charity called Gems for Gems, focused on bringing an end to the cycle of domestic abuse and in collaboration with public involvement. Gems for Gems has given over 20,000 gifts on Christmas morning across the country. They've assisted thousands of survivors, helping them to develop essential skills, financial literacy, preventative self-defense, resilience, and psychological coping skills, and empowerment, building a scholarship program for survivors. And they launched an ambassador program comprised of men and women, all unified under the same mission. The Gems for Gems ambassador program spans Canada and the US, as well as having three celebrity ambassadors within the team. Most recently, Jordan and her team at Gems for Gems have launched an initiative called Hope's Cradle. And this initiative is a partnership with fire departments to provide a safe surrender location for mothers who feel there is no other alternative to ensure the safety of their babies. And we're going to talk more about that today. In the course of her work, Jordan has received the following awards, and it's quite amazing to read the list. She received the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medal in 2023, the Top 5 Inspiring Business Leaders Revamping the Future from Eminence Globe Magazine, CIO Times, the Top 5 Most Efficient Women Leaders Shaping the Industry. 2022, she received the Culbert Family Award for Philanthropy, the Glorious Is She Inspiration Award, the Redwood Classic Community Changemaker Award, the CIO Today Most Influential Leader, the Create the Ripple Featured Author, and Aspire Top 20 Under 40 International Leaders. In 2021, she received the Monarch Collective International Women's Day Shine Together Award, 2019 Avenue Calgary Top 40 Under 40, and 2019 Calgary Changemaker of the Year. So that's a lot of approval from a lot of different organizations, Jordan. And I know you're not, you didn't come on here to talk about your achievements. You came here to talk about Hope's Cradle and the work of Gems for Gems. But you must be doing something to get the attention of all those people who care about excellence in activities.
Well, you know what, Rod? As I mentioned to you earlier, too, I am very honored to be accepting those awards, but nothing that we've ever achieved has been done solo. We have an incredible team and everyone pitches in constantly. So I really feel that I am a face that was humbled and honored to accept those awards, but it was achieved together.
Well, I understand that, and it's very good of you to state it that way. Still, there requires leadership for an organization to accomplish those things, and obviously you are providing that. And it began with reaching out to survivors of domestic abuse. Can you tell us what went through your mind when you began to see the desperate need and how you got motivated to do something about it?
Well, I've always been motivated to provide something high impact. I have absolutely no interest in reinventing the wheel or duplicating services that are already out there. So I would not have done anything had I not seen specific holes in resources provided for specifically survivors of domestic abuse. It all happened by accident, though. All I had wanted to do was do that jewelry drive, But then so many people came on board and then they wanted to do more. And I felt that if people wanted to be able to step up and help survivors of domestic abuse, who was I to turn them away? So instead, I rolled up my sleeves and tried to start creating opportunities for people to be able to give back in the way that they could give back. And I know a lot of charities, obviously money makes the world go round, but the unique thing about GEMS is that we were able during a recession to start this charity on people giving manpower and giving what they could with the skills that they had as opposed to their wallets. And because of that, we were able to really build a super strong foundation of very like-minded people who were passionate about this and wanted to put in time rather than just money. So it's a very different framework, which has been hugely successful. And yeah, it has taken on a life of its own, and I have just tried to keep up and keep doing as much justice to it as I possibly can every single step of the way. But what happened was the more we did, the more holes we saw. And because we are designed the way we are, and we're very nimble because of it, we've been able to pivot and really address the issues in front of us. One of which was the shelters really focus on the next steps directly post leaving an abusive relationship. So because they focus on that, we were able to look a little further down the line and see what makes women return 5 to 7 times. And we started addressing those issues. And a huge amount of what we were seeing was based on the financial dependency on the abuser and the emotional dependency. So we really focus on building up women's confidence and giving them the means to look after themselves and their children. One of which our initiatives, all of our initiatives really attack that. But as you mentioned, you were speaking about our Thrive program, which does the self-defense and all that. So that's very empowerment-based, obviously skills as well, especially around the financial literacy piece as well. But then our scholarship program is for trade schools. So it specifically addresses the financial dependency. But interestingly, because it's to trade schools, they're all divided into small sections. So doing well in each section, it's a quick empowerment piece as well, every single step of the way. And every single time they go through each chapter, they're given something more than a piece of paper. It's in here and in here that no one can ever take away from them, no matter what happens in the future. So yeah, that's really what GEMS has been built on.
Well, that's very inspiring. The
Thank you.
The ability to bring people out of their despair and into hope for the future, and enough of a tangible resource being the resilient human spirit and the mind, the ability to move on from a bad situation to become. Who knows what, you know, the future is so wide open for those who begin to take the steps to climb out of that pit of despair, right? So, and
very
and
much a mindset and perspective shift.
Okay. And hope is kind of the key element to what you're talking about, your or other initiative, Hope's Cradle. And that's really want to focus on that for a little bit. First,
sure.
Tell our folks what Hope's Cradle is. It's got a great name.
Thank you. I'll tell you about the name too. Ask me about the name afterwards, because I love how it was created. So Hope's Cradle is very simply a cradle embedded into the exterior wall of a fire station. And it is to provide an alternative for unsafe infant abandonments. Obviously, unsafe infant abandonments usually result in the baby being deceased. And the anonymity piece seems to be that pivotal criteria that is making women choose the unsafe option as opposed to the safe option. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, one of which is that a lot of the women are trafficked, are young, are in abusive relationships already, and I'm not, obviously, unsafe infant abandonment is never a good decision, but I have sympathy for those women, and it's super easy to villainize them, but I have sympathy for them. And Hope's Cradle really tries to provide something that looks after both the mothers and the babies. And then after the baby is surrendered, it is the same system that would kick in if the baby was found anywhere else alive, which is it gets taken to the hospital and children's services take over from there, essentially.
So women who bring a child to birth are able to bring that baby to a location, which is the an exterior wall, a special facility built into the exterior wall of a fire station.
Yes.
And they open a door, they put the baby in,
yes.
And they close the door, they walk away, and they remain anonymous. But as soon as the baby is deposited, there's an alarm goes off. Is that something like that?
Yeah, so yeah, I can explain the functionality of it. The door gets opened. As soon as the door is opened, a silent alarm goes off. So the mother is unaware of that alarm, although all of the steps are listed on the front of the door. So there's no surprises for her.
Yeah.
After about a minute and a half, there's a secondary alarm, and it's for her to give her a heads up that a firefighter will be coming soon. We just, again, to further to my point of trying to be as compassionate to both sides of this equation. We don't want a mother saying goodbye to her baby like this and then have a firefighter open the other side of the door.
Right,
like,
yeah.
right. So we're trying to keep this as respectful and compassionate to both sides as possible. So the secondary alarm goes off, the mother leaves, the door is closed and locked, so there's no re-entry. The mother has 30 days to be able to reclaim her baby, and which is really pivotal in my opinion, because maybe she needs a place to be able to just know the baby's safe until she gets out of a horrible situation or can make other arrangements or anything like that. Maybe the baby's life was about to be threatened. And there's honestly plenty of examples of that that I hope eventually Hope's Cradle is used for. I hope it isn't simply for infant abandonment, because there's so many situations where mothers know their partner is a threat to the baby, or maybe sometimes the mother is a threat and then their partner can put the baby here for to keep it safe. But yeah, and then child services takes over after the firefighters get there and do their first responder protocol.
So presumably after the 30 days there would the child would be, I mean, obviously the child is cared for from the moment it's
yes.
left at the facility, but after 30 days, the child might be given up for adoption or under foster care.
Certainly foster care. My hope is that I'm able to change the process and have the babies instantly placed into adoptive homes that will hopefully be their forever home. The foster care system is, in my opinion, the wrong place for these babies, because after 30 days, there's no one coming for them. And the foster care system is specifically built to provide an opportunity for parents and families to be able to regain custody of the baby. But that isn't relevant here after the 30 days. So to me, it's very, very black and white that the baby should have stability as quickly as possible. But that's something I'm working on behind the scenes. And of course, anything policy changing is lots of red tape, but I'm trying.
Yeah. Well, the whole process, and that's another whole topic about adoption, the high cost and the red tape with adoption and foster care. But the point here is protecting the life of the baby, giving the mother a safe way out of her situation.
Yes.
Not able or prepared in any way to care for her child. So it's a fascinating initiative, and I know there's been others around the world, the baby box or whatever, but this is very specific to the fire department, the connection to the fire department, which I think is a stroke of genius, because number one, there's a fire station in most communities in Canada, And number two, the people serving in the fire department are already, many of them are volunteers, or at least they're providing a service. They want to help their fellow human beings. So in general, firemen and firewomen are their hearts are in the right place to want to provide assistance to those in need. So is there special training that they require when, to take on this role? I mean, basically,
No.
yeah.
I mean, the protocol that is required is the same that they would use anywhere else. I mean, for the firefighters, to me, wouldn't you rather respond to the situation under your roof, or would you rather be responding in the ditch? To
Yeah.
me, it's the exact same protocol, provided the baby's alive, which sadly it is not typically. But yes, the fire stations are in every community, and that is exactly what we want for Hope's Cradle. We want Hope's Cradle to be a household name and just a resource that every community knows is available and is there. Without that, it's never going to be as successful as it could be, and as I think we need it to be.
Right.
So that requires a lot of support, a lot of people stepping up and being willing to help us expand this. Just like every initiative with GEMS, we're not going to get there unless every community steps up and works collectively and collaboratively on this.
There may be a fireman or a fire chiefs listening to this, or mayors of communities and so on, who might begin to wonder, well, what about liability? What happens? What if something goes wrong? First of all, you're providing a warm, safe place for delivering this child. Someone will be on hand within a couple of minutes to look after the child. But what if something goes wrong for, that maybe the child arrives in a desperate situation? Is there any liability that those people need to be concerned about?
So firefighters are protected as long as they follow their protocol. So they have to respond to that call the same as they would anywhere else. So the thought of some fire stations and why some fire stations have stayed away from this is what, interestingly, they all, without being connected, keep calling the perfect storm, which is what happens if they're out for an hour or 2 hours. And to me, what really grounds me in that situation is we're competing with a dumpster. Like, we have to be grounded in that, you know? Sometimes it might not be perfect, but let's remember why we're doing this, right? Let's be grounded in the alternative. And surely that is enough to reframe your perspective on that. Something here is 1,000% of the time better than nothing. And we have to keep that in the forefront of our minds. The other thing, too, is the Good Samaritan law. It's not the same for firefighters, but there's an equivalent for firefighters should they follow the proper protocol. If they don't follow the proper protocol, just like police officers, everything, they naturally have a liability, same as if you had a heart attack and they came and didn't do the proper protocol. So there's nothing different. And again, wouldn't you rather be responding to that under your own roof, knowing that it's temperature controlled, which it is, it's insulated, which it is, safe, it is locked, it is all of it. There's a camera in the cradle, not anywhere where the mother can be seen, but pointed directly at the bassinet. And you can see the baby. So you can see if the baby is in any sort of distress. Also, too, there's always off-duty firefighters that can be called to be able to go in. It doesn't, you know, what we work from in a normal situation is the firefighters on duty right now. And we can ha sometimes have catastrophic things happen because there aren't enough working. But there's always ones that are not. And in a situation like this, any group of people would call Bob, who's not working today, and see if Bob is available to be able to go. You know, like we don't have to look at this through in a linear way like that. We can look at it in the big picture and understand that each fire station is a team, and surely where babies come into it, we can all rally together and step up in the way that needs to happen.
Sure. When did you open the Hope's Cradle in Strathmore?
December of 2021.
2021. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you had babies to,
I'm not allowed to say that.
Okay.
The reason I'm not allowed to say that is because we don't have enough yet that would pinpoint a mother.
Okay.
So I have to be confidential, but it is we are very happy with the success of the program. Say that.
Wonderful. Well,
yeah, once we have more, we can be a lot more transparent. But at the moment, again, as I was mentioning, the anonymity is pivotal. And if we start exposing that, the success of the program is directly in jeopardy.
Well, privacy in general is under attack in Canada today. Sources, there are a number of reasons why that is, and people value
yeah.
privacy. And I know right now in British Columbia, medical records are becoming
yeah.
Government property rather than the property of the individual. It's tragic to see that
it is.
Place.
It is.
And then you also opened a facility in Landmark, Manitoba. When did that
yes.
one?
That one just happened. It happened, I think I was there in March.
Okay.
Pretty sure they're the time is all kind of flowing together for me. And we're really excited too, because the Landmark launch was phenomenal. It was fantastic. So many, there were a few MPs, there was a lot of government presence as well as community, which was really exciting and lovely to see. We also have an ambassador, Lynn Jeffs in Ontario, who is rallying the Knights of Columbus and all kinds of other organizations to be able to start moving this across the line in Ontario as well, which is so exciting for us. And that is what we need. We need people stepping up, and they're starting to in Ontario. They, are kind of starting to here. It's bit by bit by bit right now. So I need all hands on deck and everyone to be able to do what they can to make it happen.
Well, it's obviously success builds success. And
yes.
when there are positive stories coming out of these facilities, it's
mm-hmm.
going to encourage other people to take steps in their own communities.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give an idea what kind of costs are involved? Obviously, you have to build the facility, all the...
Yeah.
The safety measures that have to be built into it, the heating and everything else. Do you have a guess what it might cost?
Yeah, we have a very firm cost on it. Without our team having to travel, it's $22,000. And anytime there's travel, so obviously it's flights and accommodations and all of that for our construction team, it's $25,000, which I have to tell you is the fastest $25,000 I have ever seen raised.
Okay.
And no one has had difficulty. And again, to a testament to the hearts and minds of community members, they just keep stepping up. It's kind of hard to argue with the value of this. I mean, even if it was in existence for 10 years and one life was saved, that's worth 10 times that amount.
Yeah. Well,
but I do feel, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, because it's a fire station, and like you say, there's usually somebody there in
mm-hmm.
larger communities. There's no manning costs to it, like the ongoing cost of it. I mean, a little bit of heating, but it's there when it's needed. And when it's needed, there's going to be activity. But other than that,
yes.
once it's built, it's basically, it just sits there until it's needed.
It is self-sustaining except for the alarm on the door. So sometimes that just gets, it depends on what alarm system is already in place at each facility. But if there isn't an alarm system already in place, it's, I think, $27 a month.
Okay.
For a separate alarm. But that's the only thing that's not included in the cost.
Very, very minimal. And very.
Yeah.
Minimal.
Oh, yeah. You don't notice that. That's like, what is it? Two Starbucks coffees these days?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a Tim Hortons guy myself, so
me too. Me too.
But anyway, no, it's right. People are willing to sacrifice. You know, there's that saying, it takes a community to raise a child. In this case, it takes a community to save a child. And
yes, that's a beautiful way of putting it.
Giving people the opportunity to be involved in the saving of a life. I mean, to have a direct involvement, just even through a contribution, or getting involved in the organization of it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So gemsforgems.com is your organization URL. And
yes.
how can people help? You know, what, how would you recommend people get involved? Or if they want to start something like that in their community, what would they do first?
Just reach out to us, and you can reach out to us through Instagram, Facebook, our website, anywhere we are. You can reach out, LinkedIn. And really what we need is a quarterback in each area. So essentially what that quarterback needs to do is either create a team themselves, which is so simple. As long as there's someone willing to take a lead, everyone bands around this. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And basically that quarterback will need to present this idea to their town council. We've had zero issues to date, like absolutely zero issues. It's been beautiful. And find a location willing to house Hope's Cradle. Again, too, that has not been any sort of preventative element at all. And then the fundraising, which again, the fundraising, you can reach out to church groups, you can reach out to Knights of Columbus, you can reach out to Lions clubs, everything. Like, there's, it is not hard. The longest it has taken is a week and a half.
Yeah.
So it's nothing.
Well, I know our local, I'm involved with a pro-life group here in Smithers, BC. I live in Telford.
Mm-hmm.
But we recently helped a local doctor have access to an ultrasound machine. That
wonderful.
Was something that we want, which also just is reaching out to helping women who need help, and a doctor who's willing to provide a service that they might not otherwise have, and just to have it in his office. There's so many ways that people can get involved to help.
And, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Rod, too, I'd love to work with you and your group to be able to bring Hope's Cradle to your area. I would absolutely love that.
Wonderful.
It's steps, but they're not, none of the steps are difficult at all.
Wonderful.
And the result's wonderful. Yeah. I wanted to just say one thing, Rod. You did mention, and I didn't mean to skip over it. You said what happens if the baby is harmed already. Obviously, as sad as that would be, at that point, a criminal act has already occurred. So the case would be handled differently anyway. If a baby is unharmed and placed in here, that the mother is will not be pursued for criminal charges, will be completely safe. If the baby is already harmed, the mother will be pursued because a criminal act has already occurred. Now, some people have asked, like, well, if there's no cameras, which is part of our criteria, other than obviously, like I said, facing the actual bassinet part, then how would you find the mother? Well, from Hope's Cradle, there's no way. But as we talked about, as far as everyone's privacy being affected these days, there's cameras absolutely everywhere. So those will not be utilized at all if the baby has no signs of abuse. But if it has been abused, or if it's in medical distress or anything like that, that's a different situation. Not on our end, but it would be looked upon differently by the police and that type of thing. The safety of Hope's Cradle is paramount to us. And the baby, once placed in there, there's nothing dangerous, nothing that can happen to the baby. But again, too, we have that safety measure of having that camera pointed at the cradle or at the bassinet itself, just as an additional layer of safety.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's tremendous. And of course, every human being is in some danger at some time from some cause, right? And
yes.
Helping anyone get through the challenges of life and to be successful, to be a survivor, whether it's a baby or a mother or a victim of domestic abuse, to become a survivor and a victor, a victorious person living out a successful life here in Canada is a great goal. And we thank you, Jordan Guilford of Gems for Gems, for your work and the team that you have. Obviously, as you've mentioned, you have a tremendous team that works with you. Our thanks and gratitude goes to each one of them, as well as to you, for this initiative. And we hope that it brings up in many communities across the country. I know it's something I will be speaking about with people in my communities.
I would absolutely love that.
Yeah.
I would love that. The thing is that these babies that are found are viable.
Yeah.
Like, we're not talking about, you know, preemies and everything. They're full term viable babies.
We can
do something about that.
Yeah, and they depend, like all babies, on human kindness,
yes,
love, compassion, and
yes,
care. And so you're providing an opportunity for mothers to ensure that their child has that care, even if they're not able mm-hmm. to provide it themselves.
Yes.
Tremendous. So folks, visit Gems for Gems, GEMSFORGEMS.com. Is it com? Yeah, C-O-M.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today, Jordan, and we wish you all God's blessings and success in the days ahead and years ahead.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And folks, tune in again next week for another edition of CHP Talks. Thanks.